This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Getting sick is a part of life. Sometimes those diseases are caused by bacteria and we get antibiotics to treat them. But there is a growing problem with antibiotics. And scientists and doctors have been warning about the danger for years.
Antimicrobial resistance affects us all because anyone could at some point be infected by potentially deadly common microbes that no longer respond to the medicines we use to treat them.
It's getting worse. Yeah, antibiotic resistance is rising.
Now we are seeing bacteria that are resistant to the absolute last stop on the train, colistin. And so for those patients, there are no options left. So those patients are truly have gone back in time. They are back in the pre-antibiotic era.
If we don't do anything now, we will have a post-antibacterial era by 2050.
One of the greatest achievements of humankind, and it could be a thing of the past by the year 2050. But it's not inevitable, and there are people trying to do something about this. Scientists at the University of Illinois Chicago have been researching a new antibiotic in partnership with scientists in China, and they found a new class of medicine that could make drug resistance nearly impossible. Those findings were published last month in the journal Nature Chemical Biology. We'll spend the rest of the program today making sense of them with one of the leaders of that research. Yuri Pulikanov is a professor of biological sciences at the University of Illinois Chicago. Professor Pulikanov, welcome to the 21st show. Thanks for making the time to be with us.
Hello. Thank you very much for inviting.
So why, let's dig right into this. Why does it happen that bacteria sometimes learns to resist antibiotics?
Well, I mean, isn't it in our nature that we always try to resist something that is targeted against us, right? So it's just like a natural property of life. So that, and so do bacteria, that every time the doctors, the scientists try to kill them, they try to resist and they try to not being killed and try to survive. But going more deeply into the, looking more deeply into this problem, we need to say the following. So majority of the, compounds that we call antibiotics are the ones that they in first place were made by Mother Nature. So they're produced by, some bacteria to communicate with the other bacteria. And it was just like a fortuitous coincidence that we humans found them, such as the seminal works of Selman Waksman in the United States at Rutgers, or Alex Fleming in London, who discovered some of the first antibiotics, as we all know. So the main point is that from the moment that one bacteria came up with an idea how to make a nasty compound to kill the other bacteria, they already have resistance. And therefore, it is not a question of if, it's a question of when. So these genes will be spread out. So that bacteria, they basically, from the time point zero, when they start making something, right, they already have the resistance genes. Again, it will just take some time before those genes will make their way to the hospital so that the deadly strains, deadly bacterial species, which are in the hospitals, will acquire them. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. So I think what I'm hearing is survival of the fittest. You know, we think of that as something of sort of higher order creatures, but we're seeing it at a bacterial level as well. And maybe there's always been sort of a ticking clock on antibiotics. Although one of the things we hear when we're prescribed this is keep taking the rest of the prescription, right? Even if you're feeling better. Maybe
that's
you
correct.
Can talk about
yes,
this
exactly.
in a clinical setting on some of the things that we have done or failed to do that has maybe hastened this drive for fitness among our bacteria.
Exactly. So you're understanding everything exactly right. So remember this famous phrase, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. So does for bacteria. So it's extremely important to actually finish the prescription regime. Exactly as the doctor prescribed, the fact that you stopped seeing the symptoms, right? So does not mean that you have kind of eradicated those nasty bacteria in your body. So you need to finish it so that you kind of do the best to get rid of them. And if you do not do that, that actually creates a sub-inhibitory, sub-killing conditions, right? And sort of like promotes the evolution, like in your body, so that the bacteria try to come up with the mechanism how to resist. So, and there are several different ways how they can do it.
So, okay, let's talk about the scale of this threat. You heard some of that news coverage we played at the beginning of our conversation. The World Health Organization considers antimicrobial resistance one of the biggest global public health threats. How dire is our situation?
Well, it is. I won't use that term dire, so like to kind of not.
Well, it's good. Desensationalize the news. I'm fine with
exactly.
that.
Exactly, but it's very serious. The 1950s to 70s is usually referred to as the golden age or golden era of the antibiotic discovery. So that's a time, I mean, when a lot of molecules that we now, which some of which we still use, have been discovered. So, and the funny fact about that is that back then, most of those were approved by the FDA within a matter of like just a few years. So, and if they would have been put in a trial today, they would almost never been approved by the FDA just because of the standards have changed. So that's one thing. Another thing, it becomes more and more difficult to find the nuance in nature. So that it's more, it's like the time, I mean, when it makes more sense to even start to make synthetic ones, just like the one that we just recently studied, and that what you kind of like alluded to in your kind of intro. But we'll talk about this a little later. So another very important aspect, which I would like to mention here, is that unlike the medicines for example, I don't know, anti-high blood pressure or anti-cholesterol, which we all heard about, right? So the companies invest billions and billions of dollars to come up with those, to put those drugs into the market, right? And then they start mass prescribe them, and the people start mass taking those drugs. And the companies very quickly recoup the whatever funds were put to produce them or to invent them in first place. And this is the drastically different situation with antibiotics. The problem here is that, yes, you invest the same, if not more, amount of money to make it, right? And then instead of mass prescribing, mass using it, you actually keep it in a safe place as a last resort. So once you have a patient who struggles, I mean, so with an infection that cannot be treated with any other drug, only then you give that. And the reason for that is because from the moment that you start to use your newest drug in the clinic, that's when your, timer starts ticking back. So that regardless how many antibiotics we have at any given moment, it's just from the moment we start using them in clinic, we have progressively less time until the first resistance will be sort of discovered. Again, first resistance does not mean the drug is inactive. It just simply means that, okay, there are bacteria that are already resistant, and it's just a matter of time when more and more will become.
Yeah, starts that ticking clock. And I like what you said. My rule of thumb on this is if there's not a TV commercial for this medicine, you can bet that the drug companies are not making a lot of money on it and probably
exactly
not investing a lot. Yeah. Ask your doctor about penicillin. You don't see that one in the Olympics.
Exactly. So, and what I actually forgot to mention there is that basically the antibiotics do not follow the rules of market, of economy, so that against those rules, the governments must kind of subsidize the development of the antibiotics. And basically search for the new molecules by the researchers and scientists, because it simply does not follow the rules of market.
Okay, so I want to get into what this new development is, and I will say you've done a good job so far, but sometimes I will say, please explain it to me like I'm a smart teenager, smart 13-year-old. So this,
yeah,
this
please don't hesitate to.
Yeah,
to
no, no. So, so you looked at this. There's this class of synthetic antibiotic drugs called macrolones, if I'm saying that right. What did you learn about how they deal with these bacterial infections and how that differs from the antibiotics our doctors might be using now?
Okay, so actually what's interesting about this macrolones is that we, in collaboration with our colleagues from China, we use like a good old idea. The idea itself is not new. So the macrolones is a hybrid between macrolides and fluoroquinolones. Each of these classes of antibiotics are widely used in the clinic in the United States and across the globe. I mean, they're very successful antibiotics. They work very well, but of course there are resistances against each of them separately. And here we combined the two drugs in one. And it was like perhaps, I mean, the first time when it was successful. So successful means, I mean, that this new hybrid or chimera, as we call it, so like just a hybrid of the two already existing drugs, works simultaneously on the two separate targets in bacteria. And that's what makes it standing out. So that usually, I mean, so each particular antibiotic, actually I need to just, I mean, roll back a little bit here and say that.
Yeah, we don't have to get in the weeds, but I think maybe we can summarize and say it's trying to starve the bad bacteria, right? Depriving it of the protein it needs to eat.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So because, I mean, there are two targets are involved now, so that this particular antibiotic, I mean, this class of macrolides can target two targets at the same time. So the chances, I mean, of developing resistance to each target are about like 1 in 100 million. Right, so that if you now need to simultaneously develop resistance to both, I mean, targets, or in both targets, then the chances are, I mean, 100 million times 100 million, so it's 10 to the 16, which is like it's as one of my colleagues, Professor Munkin, with whom we actually did that project, so pointed out once that it's like winning the jackpot twice in a row. So yes, I mean, there are small chances or slim chances of getting it like in a casino, right? So, but I mean, to have it twice, I mean, it's almost nothing. So, and the same thing is here.
Okay, so how does this go from the journal Nature, I'm going to say Nature Chemical Biology, to something that we can go to CVS or Walgreens or our local pharmacy and get taken off a shelf when we are feeling ill? What
yes,
is that
usually,
path? Yeah, go ahead.
Usually the molecules, I mean, so that all lead compounds, I mean, so this is, I mean, we need to mention that this is not even a lead compound. This is just some, like basically some basic fundamental research that shows the possibility of successful merging the two molecules in one and each of them with the separate targets. So then the next step, I mean, would be developing this into a lead compound. And this is something, and this basically ball is in the quarters of chemists, I mean, rather than ours, so that to develop it to a lead compound, and then lead compound goes through the like pretty time-consuming process of what is called the clinical trials. I mean, there are several different steps. So usually it takes about, I mean, from anywhere, I mean, these days, I mean, probably anywhere from 5 to 10 years from the lead compound step to the market. So, and this is something, I mean, that the researchers, pharmaceutical scientists did not know back in the 50s. I mean, so back then everything made it quite very fast, I would say, compared to today.
Yeah, well, with sometimes negative consequences for that as well. All right, just fine. a minute or so left. Since this is going to be a while, it's an amazing development, but it's going to be a while before we benefit from it. What can we do in the meantime? Average people, we're getting sick. What can we do to mitigate this threat of drug resistance?
Well, first of all, just if you prescribe the antibiotic, finish it exactly or take it exactly as prescribed by a doctor. So that's like, I mean, probably the best advice I can give and that I follow myself. So another thing is try to not show up, I mean, or like without a need, don't go to the hospital. Because, I mean, the deadliest bacteria that are resistant to most known antibiotics do not exist, like, in the public transport, like, outside, I mean, in the streets, and they exist in the hospitals. So that without a need, don't go to the hospital, I mean, for something that can be done outside of the hospital. So I don't know if that can be taken as an advice. I mean,
No, that's good. You know, this is my wife is a physician, and her advice is often, just see what happens. You might not need an antibiotic. You might not need to go to the clinic even.
That's right. Because every time you take antibiotic, you're actually giving bacteria a chance. So.
All right. Great, great advice. Great development and well explained. Yuri Polikhanov is a professor of biological sciences at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have our usual Friday week in reviews. I guess you'd say that. We'll be talking with Tom Ray of the Illinois Eagle. We'll also be hearing from some reporters who covered the big political days at the Illinois State Fair ahead of the Democratic National Convention next week. That's all coming up tomorrow on the Friday 21st show, which is produced every day by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Stephanie Mosqueda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Steve Mork and Jason Croft. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening, and we will talk with you again tomorrow.